Time now for the Yahoo Sports College Podcast with Dan Wetzel.
I prefer to call it the Missouri Compromise. Not really sure what you want to be, serious or not.
Pete Thamel.
There's a strong argument that they are a better recruiting program now under Ryan Day than they were under Urban Meyer.
And SI's Pat Forte.
Do you remember back in June when everybody was really worried about the transfer portal? That's been so blown off the map by the NIL new frontier that it's like what yesterday's front burner emergency is no longer today's.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. We got Pete back.
Pete's back.
Congratulations, Pete.
I couldn't take the mockery anymore. The lack of random specific like positional coach talk when I've listened on my rungs. So I'm back to fill my lane.
If he's going to break Buffalo recruiting news, it's going to be from the living room instead of the beach for today, at least.
Sources. Richmond cornerbacks coach Ross Douglas is expected to take a quality control position with the New England Patriots. He's a former player at Michigan and Rutgers who worked with Greg Schiano's staff in 2020. Sources. Texas Tech director of recruiting Eron Hodges is leaving for Louisville. He'll work as a defensive quality control and recruiting coordinator at Louisville.
Could be Pat's neighbor.
This one's just embarrassing, by the way. Sources. These are all Pete on vacation.
Pete on vacation. He knows how to vacation, let me tell you.
I mean, I wonder who the source is for this. Sources. Buffalo has received 12 commitments among the 14 official visits it has held since Mo Lindquist took over as coach. 9 of those are commitments for the 2022 class. Bulls off to a hot start. You had to interrupt a day at the beach to let us know that Buffalo's killing it in recruiting.
Bulls fans need their knowledge, Dan.
I wonder who leaked that to you.
Who could it be?
Who could the source be?
We will not let our deep throat emerge today on the podcast. That would be unfair. It would be unfair. Oh, yeah. I would go to the grave with my sources. All right.
Impossible to figure that, crack that one. Gee, I wonder who benefited from that tweet. Maybe the guy's name in it. Let me just say this. And what the best part now is this bit has taken on a life of its own. So every time you tweet one of these obscure coaching maneuvers, it's like all the things underneath are not fans of the school going, oh, that guy sounds good. It's all at me and Pete and Pat and Sully going, tell him to enjoy the vacation.
Everyone now knows when you're on vacation, so they're watching to see when you're tweeting, and they can out you for not vacationing on vacation.
I'm still on vacation, actually, by the way, doing this podcast. Okay. So, yeah, life goes on. I'm not complaining. So
I kind of am too, but the podcast is fun. So it's
Yes. I was hoping me showing up would alleviate some of the mockery, but clearly it's only amplified it. So such is life. I know what I signed up for here, you know.
we'll get to all the college football news. Pat apparently has too much work to do to go on vacation before the Olympics. Pat and I will be heading to Tokyo July 19th. And we will do the pod from Tokyo because Lord knows the mayhem that we will get into.
Yeah, it may be 8% college athletics talk, but we're going to tell you what's going on in Tokyo and what's not going on.
Usually during the Olympics, I'm quite eager to get to some kind of normalcy.
Yeah,
we will not bore you with the intricacies of rhythmic gymnastics.
No,
but we will.
Sully and I did rock paper scissors. You have to call him for bail money if there's an international incident.
Who knows? No, you're just screwed.
I'll be in Vegas the last weekend of the Olympics, so Pete will take over then.
He'll be keeping the same hours as you at that point. So yeah,
true. Pat, why did you sign up for lots of pre-Olympic work? I don't understand what you're doing because you're already. So Pat and I apparently are on the same flight to Tokyo.
Yeah.
And which is like the flight is, I believe, 33 hours long. And so I plan on getting drunk, 2-3 times on the flight. I don't know. I once went 16 hours in coach to the Korea Olympics. That was fun.
Yeah.
16 hours. like you watch two movies. I did some work. I took a nap. They served you dinner. I don't know what I did. And then you're still like, oh, there's still 6 hours left. I'm like, yeah. I don't want to watch any more movies.
It is the longest period of your life, those trans-Pacific flights. I mean, because that's it. You can find 8 things to do with your time, and it's still going to come nowhere near close to filling the amount of time.
I remember when I went to Beijing, I wrote pretty much every story I had to do for the New York Times college football preview on the flight from, I think it was Newark to Beijing. I was writing about like Max Hall while like, you know, and I was definitely in coach and I was definitely in a window seat. Yeah. And it was just like, I was like, oh, there goes another one. There goes another one. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Pat is trying to claim he has too much work to drink with me on the flight. And I just find this to be a violation of podcast policy.
Well, now that I've found out we're on the same flight, I surrender. I will get the work done beforehand because the chance to drink with Dan Wetzel doesn't come around that often anymore. So I will, if duty calls, I will serve. I will answer.
Not allowed in Japan either because we're not allowed in bars.
Yeah.
And the bars are closing currently at 7 p.m.
Nice.
Due to COVID restrictions.
Yeah.
And we're not allowed in.
And I don't think you and I are staying anywhere near each other. So
no, and neither of us look like maybe your typical Tokyo resident. So I don't think we can kind of sneak in.
Yeah, we would have a hard time kind of trying to blend in naturally there.
Yeah, nobody's going to ask you guys for directions on the street.
No.
No. What they're going to do is they're going to say, "Why are you foreigners on the street?" And they're going to call the cops. Because they do not want foreigners there, and they do not want the media out just running around. So
we're not allowed to walk the streets.
Nope.
We are not allowed to eat at restaurants, go to bars. I shed a tear. Go shopping. No shops. No gyms.
Right.
And don't talk to anyone who is Japanese. That's one of the
Your reputation precedes you now.
This is pretty much what the most of college athletics would like to do with me, too. Do not talk to anyone in our business.
Yeah.
And stay in your hotel
college
room.
Sports is paying attention to Japan's lockdown here. They'll say this is genius and it'll all be implemented by Labor Day.
Saban has his Waylon Smithers fingers. Excellent.
Exactly.
All media must stay in the courtyard. Do not leave. We'll allow you to come and witness the game, but then you must leave immediately after and speak to nobody.
That's right. We will grant you a 3-minute Zoom call. Yep. We'll take 2 Good questions.
Times. Good times. All right. So anyway, we got that going on.
Whoever is, you know, works at Delta and listens to this podcast, you better have like the best, you know, you can't have the B-list drink cart girl for that flight. I mean, she better have calves of steel because, you know, she's going to be moving up and down that aisle.
We're coming.
We're coming.
I'm not driving. I don't have to fly the plane and I'm not driving in Japan. I can't even leave my hotel room.
Yeah, this will be our one chance for frivolity for 3 weeks. Yeah.
The big question is, can you take the cart with you once you get off the plane?
No.
We can try to make a break for it.
You're not even allowed to stop at the duty free and stock up on alcohol to take to your room.
Right.
No, nothing. Can't bring anything in, and you can't. I'm like, what?
Is there a Japanese drizzly?
I'm going to bribe my front desk people to go to the store because I'm stuck in my room.
Right.
For 3 weeks.
Doesn't your hotel allegedly have a rooftop bar? Is it going to be open?
We switched. No, we switched hotels.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. Oh, well. Oof. But no, I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's better than it sounds because, yeah. I'll do daily podcasts just for something to do. All right. Big NIL news. This is my favorite so far. Arkansas barbecue joint Wright's Barbecue, which I actually follow on Instagram if you want to get hungry every day. Wright's Barbecue in Bentonville and Johnson as 2 locations. They're big college football guys. They signed the entire Arkansas offensive line.
Genius.
3,693 pounds of USDA offensive linemen. It's according to Sully. Plus some defensive linemen as well. I don't know what they're getting.
Hopefully they're getting a bunch of free Q.
Yeah.
Free Q.
What else would you want? Like, yeah, just pay me in pork shoulder.
Brett Greenberg, who works at the Tuscaloosa News, noted that some of the athlete deals with PSD underwear. He got some of the stuff. Basically, you get free underwear. That's all you get.
Okay.
No money. But
do they have to model it, or do they just take a picture?
They just have to mention it on TikTok or something. I don't know.
Modeling it would be interesting.
Yeah, I don't think we need to go there. God knows. The one that got the most attention, I think, or two. One is Oregon defensive lineman Kayvon Thibodeau.
Who's a top three pick. I mean, he's the number one recruit in his class. Kayvon Thibodeau's a real guy.
He's working with Nike. And there's always been the new, you know, the fear is someone like Phil Knight will come in and buy all the players and stuff like that. I don't know if that's true. And then the other one is the University of Miami, which, you know, has never before had any incidents where anyone paid the players. So this is new for Miami.
Yeah.
The owner of American Top Team, Dan Lambert, is a huge Miami fan. Now, American Top Team is pretty much is one of the two or three best MMA gyms in the world. Amanda Nunez, among many others, works out of American Top Team. They've had just a ton of Jorge Masvidal. They have tons of champions, right? And there's a bunch of gyms all over. This guy is going to give $6,000 to every single Miami football player, all 90 of them, $540,000 per year. So if you play at the U, you get $6,000 base.
Yeah.
$500 a month. Pretty interesting. How many of those deals will go down where you just, it's sort of like there's a base salary? Because that's what I kind of expect. Now, I don't know if $540,000 is worth it as a marketing deal, but I don't know if this guy cares. Just say, instead of giving $540 to the athletic department, which we can get to, I'll just give it to each of the players. He certainly got a lot of publicity in his market for this move. I mean, it's a huge story in the Miami Herald. It was on all the TV stations and all that. So that may help. Thoughts on that one? I thought that was pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. Where you're just basically saying, this is my marketing budget. I'm throwing it all to each guy evenly.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting. And I do want to see if that becomes kind of a template for other places. Because the one thing that does, it alleviates the, I think, overblown fear of creating an unequal pay scale in the locker room. You know, everybody's getting the same amount, and it doesn't preclude some players like Derek King from having other deals. So, you know, that way you are helping the entire team. I do want to know, like, what he normally gives, if he is an annual booster, annual donor to the school, and if that does impact his donations to the athletic department. If it does, oh well. I think that it's indicative that you can find somebody like that probably with almost every school. I mean, somebody who's willing to throw $500,000 at helping the football program. It may not be as broad-based as his, but you can find those guys out there just about everywhere in the Power Five, certainly. Several places that are outside of the Power Five, I would think. So, I mean, I think it's really interesting. The other thing, too, now, is this a one-year deal or not? If they go 4-8, does he fire everybody and say, y'all suck? I'm not going to spend my money that way next year or not. But, you know, that's kind of the take your chance world that we're in right now.
Well, this is what I've gleaned from NIL in the last week and a half. It's like nobody really knows what's happening. All right. I've had more coaches call me to ask me what other coaches are doing more than anyone who can actually give me like a concrete vision of what is happening. So I'm going to say this about the Miami deal with the full knowledge that nobody really knows what is happening or is going to happen. I do think there's an archetype with what happened at Miami for essentially creating a trust system. So that guy you said owns MMA gyms, Dan, right?
Yeah. Training gyms, health clubs, kind of
like 10 years ago, he would have paid $100,000 to put up an ad in the Orange Bowl or wherever, you know, wherever Miami happened to be playing that year that said, hey, come to Steve's gym and come work out. It was probably a pretty ineffective way to advertise, but that was his way. And you can write that off as a donation, I believe. There's all these like gray areas with colleges and everything. So if this model, which appears to be within the realm of the rules as we know them, which is great, everybody gets $5,000. That's great. What is basically stopping Power 5 school X from saying, okay, let's rally our 10 biggest sponsors and have them put together a kitty that essentially, so say, does everybody get 50 grand if there's 10 of these guys who step up with a half million? And again, I'm using round numbers, but like I really think this is an archetype of what this becomes. And again, you won't be using it as a recruiting inducement, but you, everybody knows if you go to the U now, you're getting $5,000. And so they know if you go to Mississippi State or you go to Miami or you go to Texas or you go to USC or Washington or Iowa or wherever, like there's going to be a essentially a minimum payment for a scholarship athlete. And I just think that's where we get to. And that becomes like part of the recruiting process is what you are able to annually glean from your scholarship per month, per week, per whatever it is. And then that guy just doesn't give. Now, is it a tax donation if you're giving it to the players? Probably not. Right.
Right.
So
no, it's not. I don't believe it is. But let me add context to this, because what you're talking about. So what they're trying to do, what he started, Lambert started as a company called Bring Back the U. And the goal is to Kendrick Norton, who was a former Miami player, lost his arm in a car accident. He's the vice president of community outreach, and they're going to help recruit other businesses in South Florida or anywhere. And then Jorge Masvidal, who I mentioned, who's a very, very prominent UFC star, is an ambassador. So he'll probably be their front-facing guy on this. And as Masvidal says in this video, I'm reading the quotes are taken from the Miami Herald. We have something very special we can do for these athletes to help them get to the next level. Never in their lifetime receive scholarships. Now we can sponsor these great athletes, win many championships, get the community together, and go forward and do amazing things. I look forward to all the local businesses reaching out and getting these athletes to the next level. So basically what this company is doing is outside of the athletic department's fundraising arm is starting its own company to go around to all the different businesses in South Florida and say, kick in and we're going to pay these players. So this could get to be, if you sign in Miami, you get a scholarship, room, board, all that from the university. You may also get a minimum of 25 grand, or right, a minimum of six at this point. But this could blow up, right? So what they're doing is they're trying to organize the car dealer and all the different things. But this is a direct competition, of course, to the university's athletic department fundraiser. And I just was told a story. I won't do the details because I'm not sure what business was hit up for their annual buy a quarter page ad in the game program. And they're saying, why would I do that? I can get more attention by just giving the $800 or whatever it is directly to the quarterback. Like that's an ineffective means. And we discussed this before. This is a revolution of efficiency. There was a time when you wanted to sell your used car, you had to buy a little ad in the newspaper, in the classifieds, and describe it in like one sentence and hope that somebody saw it. Yep. Now, obviously, there's far more effective online ways. You got pictures, you got everything, right? Remember, you had to buy a house that way. Like they used to have apartments and houses, like 4-bedroom colonial, and people would drive around and go to the, and then they find out it's a dump or it's on the side of a busy street or whatever. Now, like Zillow is like one of the most popular people to sit there and scan that thing all day long. So this is an efficiency thing, but for the athletic department, these $800 ads, let alone these $540,000 deals add up. And this has been the one big threat is at what point do they say, I got to lay some people off. I got to shutter a sport. Even I've got to do this, this, and this, because my money is going directly to athletes and not this. And I think this is this is direct competition to the University of Miami. At the same time, it's giving fans what fans of the U want to win in football. And I would say most fans of schools would say, yeah, I'll give up that men's diving team if we can be better in football. That's sort of the problem, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's obviously, if this is a zero-sum game, then what you are giving to the athletes is being taken away from somewhere else. I want to wait and see whether it's 6 months, whether it's a year, whether it's 2 years to find out if it really is a zero-sum game. If universities are reporting significant drops in donations or if this is different money. And we've talked about this some, that some of it is just simply going to come above the table. You know, I don't know who all like is involved in the Miami situation and if they were perhaps ever inclined to help their athletes without anybody knowing it. And now they can do it with everybody knowing it. But I do know this. I can tell you this anecdotally. The late Brett Baripp, who was involved with a lot of schools, was approached and asked to be part of a $1 million pool for recruiting for one school. He said no, he wasn't going to do it. But all of that money now could theoretically be raised on the up and up and be put to work, you know, and let everybody know front facing that, yeah, we have raised this much money to help our student athletes. So, you know, where the shells all move in this shell game is going to be really fascinating, I think, in the next year.
So here's two predictions. One, there's still a bunch of underground cheating because nobody wants to pay the taxes.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, it's a huge factor. If you're just giving somebody $100,000, half of it's gone. Right. So I really do think, and then there's also like schools that only know how to operate underground and they're going to stay underground. And that's just that world has been so entrenched underground, especially in basketball. It's going to be hard to pull it above ground completely. The other prediction is that it's a bad time to be like the 11th associate athletic director at some Power Five school, because like the associate athletic director in charge of getting the Steve's MMA gym sign up in the Orange Bowl is now all of a sudden going to be like, wait a minute, like Derek's just skipping line here and taking the money directly. And I do think we will see some right sizing of athletic departments because some of the ancillary people become less valuable because the players can now just go directly to where the money goes. So, look, I don't think this is, again, we've talked about this a bunch. This is going to radically change how the product ends up looking on the field, but it will alter things. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And those who are creative, if you can figure out the Moneyball way, you know, if you can figure out the smartest, most efficient way to get money in players' hands, it is going to translate on signing day.
Yeah. Another factor real quick, too, whether the money is above the table or below the table, Pell Grants and other financial aid forms. You know, the more that the government knows you're accepting, the less you may be able to be eligible for a Pell Grant. And a lot of players get money from Pell Grants.
That is true, and I'm good with that because these guys can make money, and that Pell Grant money, which is finite, can go to more regular students who don't have this opportunity, right? Yep. The whole point of the government aid is when you can't do for yourself, and we understand that there are students. Everybody's in favor of a poor kid getting to go to college, right? That has shown that acumen. So, great, less government dependency funding our athletic departments. Because quite honestly, I don't really feel that great about if we're going to have a Pell Grant system, which we should. I'm fine with a Pell Grant. I'd rather go to the nursing student. I'd rather go to the engineer than a football player who has the opportunity, who always could have earned this. One thing about Miami, you go back to Nevin Shapiro. Okay, so we know a great deal about how Nevin Shapiro operated because of he was indicted federally. He had a lounge named after him at the University of Miami. He gave money directly to Miami. There's a famous picture we ran in the story we did on Nevin Shapiro of him handing a check to Donna Shalala at a bowling event, if you remember. It was like a $75,000, and he had Ibis? What's the mascot?
Harry the Ibis or whatever the hell
it is. No, whatever. It's there. And they're at a bowling alley.
Sebastian. There you go. Thank you.
At a bowling alley in South Beach. And I mean, it's a great picture.
You guys missed me, didn't you?
We did. But he was also paying all this other stuff, right? At one point, he claims, I don't know if this is the veracity of this, but he claimed he told Donna Shalala that he would pay, they should name him the head coach, and he would pay $1 million personally to the offensive defensive coordinator. And he would just be the figurehead, and he'd hire two good football people, and they'd win the national championship. He said he claims he made that the greatest.
I mean, he did run pyramid schemes, so like that sounds like a pyramid scheme to me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he was like, "I'll personally fund the." And that was when a million would buy you the best guy. Shows how crazy. Talk about right sizing. So many years ago, I wrote a column about this, and I'll tell you how long ago it involved Shoelace Robinson. And my point on this was always, so when was that? I mean, that's 10 years probably.
At least.
When did he last play at Michigan? Probably something like that. My point was Michigan has an endowment of, you know, whatever, $40 billion. And what they're saying is if we allow this, and remember, he was a very exciting player. Right? He was on the cover of EA Sports. And
Denard Robinson would have made bank.
Denard Robinson was a big-time player. And he had this shoe thing. He didn't tie his shoes.
Right.
He played with untied shoes, and he was called Shoelace. And so it does not take a marketing expert to be like, hey, this is the most exciting player in college football. He doesn't tie his shoes. Nike could do an ad. I mean, it's good. It's a lot of money. And the big argument was, well, if Shoelace gets his money, then we can't fund these smaller sports. And my point was Michigan is choosing not to fund these smaller sports. They have $40 billion. They can fund all the sports they want. What they're saying is it's not a priority for them to fund these sports. My point remains, what you're saying is it's not important for us, so we're going to make Shoelace Robinson fund it. Right? And so if it doesn't matter to you, why does it matter to him? Why are you taking his money and funding sports that don't matter? And that's the same issue. So while none of us want to see sports go away, it's now on Miami to fund all of their sports from their general fund, build the students, whatever, and don't take it from De'Ara King. Because what they were doing in the past is saying, well, De'Ara King, you could have made all this money, but we're not allowing you. So because of that, we're going to take the money that should be yours in an open market, and we're going to fund a diving team. I assume Miami's got a diving team.
They actually have a very good diving team, yes.
I would kind of expect they would. Like, if I was a diver, I think Miami would be my spot.
You want to go to South Dakota State to dive?
Sources, University of Buffalo diving team sucks.
You can dive right in Lake Erie, man. Come on.
Right? So this is like, basically, you've given up the monopoly. You've given up control. It's free market. You know, and that's, it's going to be inherent on these schools to say, I don't know how much it's going to change, but I think it's fair to say there'll be a 10%, a 20% dip in donations. Let's say some number.
Oh, yeah. That's real.
It's apparent on the school to find that 10% or admit what they were basically billing their star football players for and say, we never really cared about the diving program, but we made you care about the diving program, former star athlete.
Or admit that we overhired people and need to make some cuts.
Well, that's going to be the last cut, though. You know that.
Always. They don't protect themselves.
That's going to be the last cut. It's very, very interesting where it goes. And I agree with you, Pete. No one knows. Like, I got athletic directors and coach. Yeah, same thing. Like, what do you think this is? What's happened? You know, like, who knows, man? But that Miami thing to me is the future. A prominent booster will organize the company and then rally all the boosters. And so now Miami, you're the 11th athletic director at Miami trying to go out and get deals, and you're dealing with Jorge Masvidal running around against you. Yeah. And then it's like that, where they just hire that guy away. I don't know. It's very, very interesting. It's competition, but seeking the same goal.
It is funny. I talked to somebody in college sports yesterday who said, do you remember back in June when everybody was really worried about the transfer portal? That's been so blown off the map by the NIL new frontier that it's like what yesterday's front burner emergency is no longer today's.
Remember 3 summers ago when satellite camps were like the scourge? You want to talk about manufacturer emergencies. Satellite camps.
Existential threat. I swear to God.
It is amazing. We are lucky to cover this sport this industry, I guess you would say, where there's like everything is always a front burner emergency, even when it doesn't need to be, you know, like they're going to sell alcohol in the stadiums. My God. Yeah. Okay.
It's complete bananas. Like it's July right now. Two of us are on vacation. We could do 2.5 hours like with a breeze on what's going on in college football right now. Like easily.
Yeah. College coaches are the biggest whiners. That's the thing.
Yeah. Like especially all basketball. Football.
The adversity. Nothing is funnier than the annual. They changed the recruiting calendar in July when we can visit AAU camp story of all the coaches anonymously complaining. This is crazy. It's like, what? Is anyone? I can't go directly from the peach jam to the big time. Now I got to go home and see my kids for 3 days. existential threat. On the positive, though, I think all of this is positive, but not. Big Ten Freshman of the Year in basketball last year, Hunter Dickinson from the University of Michigan, withdrew from the NBA draft and is coming back to U of M. He cited NIL opportunities. I would argue that the bigger thing to cite is lack of NBA draft opportunities, but that's fine. Doesn't really matter. College basketball's getting a very good player back. And his quote, the NLI stuff has factored into my decision. Being able to make a little extra money, not have to worry about my financial situation while at school is definitely a pro. I'm glad the NCAA was able to do the right thing and allow students to make money off their brands. Again, we think this will be a big way of keeping some borderline people in college because a Hunter Dickinson, he could stay 4 years at Michigan. That team's going to be loaded. He could make a nice penny. And obviously not NBA money, but until you're sure, why go?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's another one that's going to be kind of an interesting test case where you are, it's unclear what exactly your draft status is. You like college, you want to be there, you're enjoying it. Well, now you can do it and put an extra five figures, maybe high five figures, maybe low six figures in your pocket while you're at it and get better at your sport and have a good time. You know, I mean, hey, look, I mean, that I am by no means telling anybody they shouldn't go chase life-altering money, but also those of us who have been through college know those are pretty good years. And I sometimes, you know, don't like to see people rush themselves out of college when they're going to end up 10, 15, 20 years later saying, man, that was as much fun as I'm ever going to have.
Stay here. Stay as long as you can. For the love of God, cherish it.
Yeah, I really think it was smart of Hunter Dickinson to frame his return to Michigan around, and I don't know if he framed it, he mentioned it, and then it got blown up and quote tweeted, and it just offered us a little window into this new world that we're going to. Look, he's the type of center that the NBA does not value anymore, right? Like, he is a big plotter. Now, he's an excellent player, but he is not your stretch. What is it? Every NBA draft prospect now, guards 1 to 5. Guard, like Hunter ain't guarding 1 to 5.
Positionless. Right? Yes.
Yes. Positionless. Yes. Yes. Hunter's got a position. It's center. Yeah. So
7'1", 260 pounds, man. Yeah. He is going to be where he's at.
Yeah. Anybody watched Bobby Portis trying to cover Devin Booker on the perimeter last night? That if you put Hunter Dickinson in pick and roll like that, it's not going well. So
yeah. What happened at the end of that UCLA game, Pat? Was Hunter inbounding instead of under the basket when Michigan could have tied the game? Yeah, that was like, did Juwan Howard ever answer the question about that? I saw Juwan Howard at a prep school tournament the other day, and the first thing I thought of was your indignant tweets about Hunter Dickinson's misuse at the end of that UCLA game, Pat. Yeah, I did not ask him about it. He was on the phone.
I think if I remember correctly, that he gave the classic, you know, vague non-answer of like, we thought that play gave us the best chance to score or something like that.
Yes. Well,
nobody else thought that. The Michigan coaching staff may have thought that. Nobody else in the building or anywhere in America thought that.
Yeah. Didn't take a lot of physics classes at Syracuse, but 7'2" under hoop, little time. Usually pretty direct line to the basket. So, no, Hunter Dickinson, he'll be an interesting test case because a brand name like Hunter Dickinson, who played a year and was the best freshman in the league, is going to be more marketable in Ann Arbor than a top 10 recruit. Like, he's been there. People know him. He's recognizable. Again, these kids who come in, one of the interesting things in name, image, and likeness is you can't wear the Michigan logo. Like, you can't wear school gear. But from what I understand, now, is Michigan going to sue someone if they do wear gear in a commercial or in an Instagram post? I don't know. But part of you cashing in on your name, image, and likeness is that people have to know your name, what you look like, and that's like a big part of it. And a lot of these recruits are just sort of like YouTube films, and their name is recognized to the hardcore fans, but they are not recognizable yet. And so that Hunter Dickinson will be one of the more recognizable players in college basketball next season. There will certainly be others in a market like Michigan. Like, he should have all the Zingermans. Like, he should never pay for Zingermans again. right? Like, I mean,
yes.
It'll be interesting to see if some Detroit opportunities come his way, like the biggest car dealership in Detroit. Do they pay him 10 grand to go sign autographs? Is Hunter Dickinson more recognizable than the best football player at Michigan right now? I would think yes. I would
absolutely think
yes.
But first of all, the basketball program was way better. We got to see Hunter Dickinson, and he does literally stand out.
Yes.
So,
Aiden Hutchinson is probably Michigan football's best player. I haven't read my magazines yet, but I would think that off the top of my head, the defensive end who could have gone and been a first, second round pick and came back, I would think he's the best player on the roster. They got a decent tailback.
J.J. McCarthy.
Oh, that Dax Hill, the safety, maybe.
Yeah. No, the quarterbacks. Yeah. But the point is, look, for college basketball, if you can keep a guy for one more year, like, what are we talking about? I mean, college basketball gets just pillaged.
Yeah.
And for so much of the NBA now, the route is, I don't know the number. It's a very high percentage of players go play in the G League at some point now. Like the guys that just get to the NBA and stick and never are pretty low.
Very rare.
It's just changed the way it is. It's very much like AAA baseball or hockey, where you have to go through the minors a little bit, at least for some stretches. So, you know, is there more money as you prepare? It's interesting. It's a good thing. It's a good thing for, I don't, if you're a Michigan basketball fan, you're pretty happy. Hunter Dickinson's back.
Right.
And if you like college basketball, you're like, good. I don't want to see Hunter Dickinson playing for the Rio Grande, whatever, you know, like I want to play in college basketball.
Yeah. So the week before the pandemic sort of reared its head and canceled the NCAA tournament, I had spent 3 days in Portland, Maine with the Maine Red Claws, the Celtics G League affiliate. And I was going to do a story about G League versus college basketball at the Final Four that year. Now, everything got wiped out. I never wrote the story. It just didn't make any sense when everything got everything got completely waxed. But I went up there for a couple of days and talked to all the guys on the Celtics G League team, and they had really interesting perspectives. Some of them left early, Carson Edwards, Tremont Waters, and a bunch of other guys who could have gone back to college in the G League. And look, Portland is a great actual city. Like, it's an awesome little place, and they have a cool little gym. And they basically said the thing that attracted them to the G League the most was the ability to play the actual NBA game, meaning on the NBA floor, spaced and paced. That phrase was used quite a bit, like the NBA, as opposed to in college, which is just like, it's very different basketball. And the other thing was they could work out unlimited. Like, there wasn't like, oh, coach can only be in the gym this time. You know, volleyball's got the gym, all that stuff. They work out three times a day if they want. And their workouts are tailored toward their actual profession. A lot of pick and roll read stuff. Anyway, it was a really interesting window because the G League life was fine. Like, they went on an off day bowling at like a bowling alley in the Portland Mall and whatever. But it's not like Ritz-Carlton's and private flights and filet mignon. Like, they made about 80 grand. I seem to remember that number being thrown out, which is a good living, right? Like, most, I remember talking to one of the kids' parents who were up there visiting at the time. They were like, look, like, first time graduated from college and was making 85 grand a year. It's a pretty good living. But I would think that there will be a lot of reconsideration for the fringe guy, for the guy inevitably going to the G League. You know, you see these guys, he's staying in the draft despite being projected as a late second round pick, which means he's not getting drafted. I do think that's going to pull some guys like Hunter Dickinson back into college basketball.
I also wonder real quick, let me add this, like, we're talking about the zero-sum game of money. Like, if all the Zingerman's money that maybe went from the programs or signage in the stadiums now goes to Hunter Dickinson, this is all theoretical, of course, and that is at a loss of $50,000 in revenue for Michigan and a gain of $50,000 for Hunter Dickinson. Well, if Hunter Dickinson makes the Michigan team a top five team instead of a top 15 team, do they make up for that in ticket sales? I mean, maybe they sell out every game as a top 15, but you almost assuredly would as a top five. You know, I think that you can, there can be some ways to get that money back just by being a better product on the floor or on the field.
I agree. Also, as I understand it, they're still getting the Hunter Dickinson jersey sales.
Ah, yeah. There you go.
Mm, right. So something like that. But yes, totally. A school like Michigan basketball, which there are, you know, Duke's going to sell out every game no matter what. But Michigan needs to be top five to sell out Chrysler Center every game. Yeah, more tickets, more parking, more more all sorts of different things. So
more concessions.
It's never bad to win. It's never bad business to win. All right, in a cross topic for us here, NIL and chicken wars. Ongoing saga. Needless to say, we're all over this. Spencer Rattler, quarterback at Oklahoma. Miles Brennan, quarterback at LSU. Seven Banks, the cornerback at Ohio State. Have all thrown in and are endorsing Raisin Cane's chicken fingers.
Big. Big.
Sully, does Raisin Cane's have a chicken sandwich?
Yes. They have limited menu, but it's that's one of the things on it.
I love the fact that Sully has all this information completely at his fingertips.
Yes. I did not hesitate as to where that question should be directed. Are they a significant combatant in the chicken sandwich war?
I think they are. They've spread out to Los Angeles. There's a few opening out here. So they're trying to go a little countrywide. So more so than Zaxby's. And Zaxby's has a much more robust menu. So at least you can get it out here.
My kids are big on Raising Cane's. They are pro Cane's.
Our friend Coach O is also a big Cane's supporter. When we were in New Orleans for the national title, first place I went to was Cane's. Walk in and there's a giant cutout of Coach O with number one, Raising Cane's.
There you go.
Well, Miles Brennan's holding up a styrofoam container of chicken fingers, fries, dipping sauce, coleslaw, bread. If he's eating all this, I'm a little concerned. A big soda. He's calling himself a Caniac ambassador. You didn't go to the chicken joint that they blew up or was that Raisin Cane's? I've been to that one that was threatened to blow up. It was right on Canal. I'd actually been there. I was not the guy.
You were not the one threatening to blow it up. Yeah.
If you don't remember, a gentleman walked into this chicken joint in New Orleans, told the manager he was about going in the bathroom to blow the joint up. The manager called the police thinking it was a bomb threat. The man was just really rudely declaring how he was going to take care of business in the bathroom. I still don't know why you taunt taunt the manager with that. Like, you're going to be clean. Don't you just slip in and just do your thing and get out?
Yes. But
anyway, that did happen. Louisiana delivers. Anyway, if you're not, let's say this, you guys are Heisman voters. Okay. And let's say you're I don't know what's your favorite. Pete doesn't eat the chicken sandwich, but Pat, I think you're a Popeyes. Are you with Popeyes?
Yeah. I would take Pop to Popeyes with the number one pick.
Okay. Yeah. Will the fact that Miles Brennan and Spencer Rattler, and look, no cornerback is winning this thing. Okay. Sorry. Seven, but that ain't going to happen. They're sponsoring Raisin Cane's and you're a Popeyes guy. Could this impact your Heisman vote?
You know, Dan, I'd like to think that I am high-minded enough that, you know, I could rise above petty chicken rivalry and at least put Spencer Rattler second on my ballot. If he goes to Popeyes, I can put him first. But for there now, he can get as high as second. How about that?
Every action has a reaction.
That's right.
So be careful out there, gentlemen. Popeyes, Chick-fil-A, very popular in college football. I don't know. You'd be thrown in with Raisin Cane. I personally wouldn't affect me, but I don't vote. So, all right. Two things I want to discuss about Ohio State. First, this little item is just tremendous. And I know no one ever associated with Ohio State, University of Florida, or anywhere else would be. It's got to be shocking news. But Urban Meyer, our pseudo NFL college coach, already been fined for violating rules in the NFL. In the single most predictable thing to happen, the Jacksonville Jaguars were fined $100,000 and it's going to have to forfeit an undisclosed amount of organized team activity days in 2022 because Urban Meyer was running a practice outside the rules. Apparently he was going 11-on-11, which was not allowed.
No truth to the rumor that Lane Kiffin dimed him out.
Urban Meyer's very first organized team activity in the NFL. The very first day. And he's already breaking the rules. What? No way.
That's, I saw there were three franchises that got fined for OTA violations, and they got fined the most. So they were the biggest violator.
49ers and Cowboys got 50 grand each. Jags got 100. I just love it. Just, it's like, coach, the union says we're only in shorts, jerseys, and helmets. Yeah, Oklahoma drill.
What? Let's go.
Where's Tebow? Tebow will do it.
Who wants to get their stripe on their helmet? Yeah. No.
Say this about Urban Meyer. It's never boring. Like, no, he has never been boring in his entire history of coaching. He wasn't even boring. He's a broadcaster. He was a great broadcaster, too. Yeah. Never boring with Urban Meyer. He, yes, he's always running close to the flame.
Where everybody was wondering about Urban's transition from college fiefdom lord to NFL coach. So he tried to hire Chris Doyle, the disgraced strength coach from Iowa. He did hire his old quarterback to play tight end, who hasn't played football in like a decade. And now he's committed OTA violations. So I think the transition's just been magnificently smooth so far. Just
and he's got seamless. New facilities coming. New facilities.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Got to have facilities.
Love it. Urban, we're going to follow Urban like he's a college coach because we miss him. We can't quit you, Urban. We admit it.
We need. They also may lose to Alabama this year. Now, they really wouldn't lose to Alabama, but they're not going to be good for a while.
Wait till he has to start losing games. Oh, my God. I mean, the man is already invited. How do you violate the rules on day one? Just there was oblivious to the rules. Clearly, he was just like, what? They were serious about that?
There is a union. Yes. Yeah, that union thing that nobody didn't exist in college.
The players don't call home to mom. They call the union. Mom, I think Coach Meyer's being too tough. No. That's not how it works. Yeah. All right. However, the machine that Urban left behind at Ohio State, currently led by Ryan Day, is absolutely crushing it in recruiting right now. Now, lack of talent is rarely an issue at Ohio State. It doesn't matter who you got there. You're going to recruit well. But as we watched last year in the national title game, there was still a decided gap between Ohio State and Alabama. Now, I know they won it X number of years ago, 7 years ago. But they beat Clemson, so they were making some gains. But Alabama was just a way better team. Just this week, they added a number of five-star recruits. Apologies, JT, but JT Tuamaloa, I believe is how you say his name. He is the defensive end from Bellevue, Washington, five-star, number six in the rival rankings in the class of 2021. He was a bit of a kind of an interesting kid. He never wanted to talk recruiting with any of the recruiting gurus. No one knew what he was going to do. Everyone wanted this kid. That commitment gives Ohio State, in the class of 2021, five-star players, which is the exact same amount as Alabama. And they actually have a higher average star ranking per rivals than Alabama. The Buckeyes also have the current number one recruiting class in 2022. Obviously, a long way to go on that. But they have 4 or 5 stars in that group and are way ahead of everybody else. They're loading up. Brian Hartline in particular seems to be getting a lot of credit for just landing wide receivers galore, just stacking up great players. But the Buckeyes are crushing it right now in recruiting. Pete, we'll go with you, our Ohio State correspondent.
Well, look, like when Ryan Day took this job over, he did not have the aura of Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer could walk in a living room in Seattle. He could walk in a living room in Los Angeles, in Atlanta. And he was a brand name. Ryan Day was not that when he took over. But I think you mentioned the machine, Dan, and it's led by Mark Pantone. And it's one of the three best recruiting offices in the country, if not the best one. Certainly Alabama's is right up there. And there is a defined and refined way that Ohio State has recruited, and they've really recruited nationally. They don't often lose in Ohio, although I think they did lose to Notre Dame last week on a kid. I think somebody mocked Dan for that because he said in the last podcast that Ohio State would never lose to Notre Dame on an in-state player.
Like 1 minute after that podcast post, every Notre Dame fan is killing me. I'm like, come on, you didn't get one for 20 years. All right.
I got a kick out of that. So
that was fun.
I mean, look, what Ohio State has been able to do is mine the vast natural resources in their local footprint, but really go out and just be a thumper brand nationally, coast to coast. They've dipped into Florida. They've dipped into Atlanta, pillaged Texas, quite frankly, and really gone out. And they are, there's a strong argument that they are a better recruiting program now under Ryan Day than they were under Urban Meyer. And if you think back, like, to the class that had, who was it, Bosa, Zeke, and there was, like, one other top five. I mean, they had some monster classes, but there has been no dip. I think we can say safely at this point, going into Day's third full season, there has been no dip at all, which is pretty remarkable. And it's a testament to Pantone, first of all. But then, yeah, Brian Hartline's been a juggernaut on the recruiting trail. Al Washington has. Larry Johnson is like the defensive line Yoda. So they have Jack Sawyer and Big JT, the two best defensive end recruits in that class. Corey Foreman's in that conversation, too. But they basically have 2 5-star defensive ends who are going to line up across from each other. Ohio State had a very good defensive line last year. They did not have a thumper game changer top five pick defensive end, which they had essentially had for the last 6 or 7 years prior. And so Sawyer was dominant in the spring. JT obviously comes in with bona fides. I really think that is that like extra giddy up that makes you a playoff team when you have those type of ends. So no, everything keeps rolling for Ohio State. Kerry Coombs is an elite recruiter. Al Washington, the linebacker coach, has done an unbelievable job. I mean, you can go on and on. But what Urban Meyer did when he got to Ohio State, when he really pulled the Big Ten along with him for those years, was he arrived there and made recruiting like nationally a priority and part of the culture. And he gave Pantone the resources to build the recruiting department. And that culture of relentless, endless recruiting has obviously resonated and maintained there. And it's really simple why Ohio State is so much better than Michigan right now. Just you go 1-25 in these recruiting classes and they are just exponentially better year after year after year. And when you stack great classes, the difference shows up on the field.
Yeah, no, and I mean, the carryover effect from staff to staff or head coach, because there is a lot of same coaches involved, has been impressive. And it does show that while Pete named off all the assistant coaches who are really good at recruiting, but the head coach has to be able to finish deals, has to be able to close. And Ryan Day, like Lincoln Riley, you know, there was that question, well, how's he going to do as the closer, as the new guy? Look, they are selling an offense, but they're also selling a personality that's approachable. You know, I think that Ryan Day has everything to sell and is showing a great ability to sell it. And to Pete's point, sell it outside the footprint, which they have done and continue to do. And it's interesting because we've seen Michigan have to get up and do the same thing. I just saw something on Twitter within the last few minutes where Michigan just got a commitment from a defensive back from Brentwood, Tennessee, who was also considering Auburn and Oklahoma for class of 2022. We'll see if that commitment holds. But still, you know what? The Big Ten has realized, okay, yeah, we got to protect our backyard, but we've also got to go elsewhere. And if Michigan's ever going to catch up to Ohio State, that will also include national recruiting.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the way Ohio State's building these classes. So they get they start early, 4 kids from Ohio are all 4 or 5-star recruits. They get the best kids from Ohio. Then it's Georgia, Carolina, Texas, Florida, Texas, Arizona, Florida, Illinois, Memphis, right? They're going all out. I do think there's a great opportunity for that second tier Ohio kid that used to always go to Ohio State that isn't there. There's a lot of good players. And we've talked to Kentucky is particularly feasting on that. Penn State's doing really well in Ohio, things like that. There is that spot where there's a lot of good Ohio players that Ohio State aren't taking. But to me, they have revved this up to where they're going to be able to get on a field with Alabama and get as close to equal talent, if not have better talent at some point. It's very, very hard to do that. And we see the difference in that title game. We're just watching the game going, yeah, I mean, we could play this game 10 times. Alabama's going to win it, you know, 9 of them or something like that. There's still a huge gap. Well, there's going to be less of a gap in a couple of years. I could absolutely see Ohio State winning the national title. And, you know, Ryan Day's done an unbelievable job in those first couple of years, but you never really know. Even after 2 years, Larry Coker was 24-0 at one point.
That's true.
If your program is good enough, you're going to get some years. But then so now we're at that spot where you're looking at what's this team going to look like 5 years into Ryan Day's run. 6 years in, and boy, if these kids are, I'll take my chances with this many great players. So Buckeyes are rolling right now. And talk about name, image, and likeness. Yeah, they're going to do all right in Columbus. My goodness. Wouldn't worry too much about it.
I think when you look back at this 22 class that Ohio State is now ranked number one in, that has, I believe, 4 5 stars, which is more than twice than anyone else has at this point. It's still very early. Alabama tends to make late charges. Quinn Ewers from Southlake, Texas, is obviously the guy. Tom Herman probably still has his job at Texas if Quinn Ewers keeps his commitment there. You can really look back to the downfall of Herman at Texas. You can pinpoint a lot of things. But when Quinn Ewers decommitted and then went to Ohio State, and then they threw a couple losses on after that, that started the backslide to him getting fired. Because when you have that best in state, best in country, 5-star recruit, that represents hope. And when Quinn Ewers decommitted, that killed the hope for the future of Texas. And I think Hudson Card, who was on campus at Texas, is going to be a hell of a quarterback, by the way. But I'm not necessarily saying that was right, but that was something that Tom Herman could not overcome. That kid's going to Ohio State, so of course the 5-star receivers want to go play with him, right? I mean, have you guys seen his mullet, Quinn Ewers? I don't know if you guys have.
Looks good. Not.
Oh, yeah. That's thank you, Sully. I like chicken sandwich questions and mullet questions should just all be directed this way.
He had a nice video with some sidearm action and the flow coming out the back. It was I was impressed.
Yes. The party will be in the back in Columbus starting in 2022.
Gotta love Sully, the mullet.
How many mullets, Sully, were there on the baseball field in Omaha for the College World Series?
A million of them. Oh my goodness. So many mullets, so many beautiful mustaches. It was honestly impressive how much just facial hair and lettuce was flowing out there.
Are you still hungover, Sully, from that?
No, I'm good now. We're good now. But I'm looking at way too early crystal ball next year, Omaha 8 projections right now. So we're ready for next year.
It's good to see the mullet make a comeback.
Yeah, you know, everything comes back. Everything. Every terrible piece of clothing you've ever had, every terrible haircut you've ever had. And I've had them all.
Shorts.
It's eventually
coming back.
Yeah.
Shorts are coming back. Yeah.
Yeah. The baggy mullet jeans are way back right now. And it's disconcerting.
So bad. So bad.
I prefer to call it the Missouri Compromise. Not really sure what you want to be, serious or not.
Was that signed at Shady Gators at the Lakers? Yeah.
You're invoking Henry Clay on the podcast here, I believe.
You walk into Springfield, right? Missouri, and ask for the Missouri Compromise and a haircut. They know exactly what you're talking about. And it isn't U.S. history. It's got to look good on Monday through Friday. But when I get to Shady Gators, I want to let this thing hang out. All right. Ongoing animal wars.
It got to get to them.
The ongoing saga in Australia, it's just awful. The rodent plague.
It's been bad.
A woman,
very bad.
A farmer's wife reportedly woke up with a mouse eating her eyeball.
Oh, come on. Stop it.
No. That's what they said, according to the Sun. The London Sun is such a reputable paper.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I don't believe this story, but it might, I don't know. It's about as believable as that guy getting stuck in the whale mouth. it's just the pictures are gross. Meanwhile, in Austria and Australia, same thing, right? Oh, shrimp on the Barbie. Here's a scary one. I don't even know what to say about this. A 65-year-old man in Austria went to the restroom, took an early morning visit to the toilet at his home. And then he felt a nip in the genital area.
Oh, no.
Shortly after sitting on the toilet in Graz, just after 6 a.m., he looked in the toilet and discovered an albino rectilated python.
What?
Reticulated.
Oh, no. You can't even be safe on your own, John. The throne?
the throne. It's a man's throne.
Man. It wasn't even like a garden snake. It was a python.
Yeah. It escaped from the apartment His neighbor is a 24-year-old male, and the python escaped unnoticed and showed up in the other dude's toilet. And the poor guy's doing his morning business and, quote, felt a nip.
Oh,
how do you lose a python?
You see, like, I would sue that neighbor for everything he has and then everything his family has and his extended family and anybody who's ever met him.
For his entire bong collection for being stoned enough to lose his python.
The younger man keeps 11 non-venomous constrictor snakes and one gecko.
11?
That's good. He is facing police investigation on suspicion of causing bodily harm by negligence. Guilty. According to the AP, the victim sustained only minor injuries, police said.
The trauma will last forever.
PTSD.
Yes. Absolutely. I'm in counseling for the rest of my life if I'm that guy.
Who is the police getting to describe this as a minor injury? This is a...
It's like minor surgery, which happens to someone else. Pete's inference there, which seems completely plausible about the bong-hitting python owner. Going back to our last episode, when Dan impugned the disc golf community by saying they're all stoned. I heard from several people wishing to rebut that gross generalization, Dan. So you might want to apologize. To the disc golf
community. I apologize to the disc golf community. Some of you aren't stoners.
There, okay.
My question is, why not? That's it. Why not? What are you doing?
We covered it. Good.
I generalized. I stereotyped. I am wrong. And then finally, to get back to where we started here, Japan.
Yes.
You and I, Pat, need to be on high alert over this situation. As you remember, there was a nuclear reactor disaster.
Fukushima.
Yeah, yes. Bad situation. Well, so obviously they had to leave areas that had previously been populated. Well, the animals moved in. Quote, an indestructible radioactive hybrid terror pig.
Whoa.
Indestructible radioactive hybrid terror pig.
Can it just go kill COVID? Like, can't that pig like take down the Delta variant?
So there was a wild boar created a fiefdom covering the area where 160 humans left. That ore is cocky, and boars are cocky and aggressive, and they have lost all of their natural wariness. The marauding boar began interbreeding with escaped domestic pigs and that had made good with their trotters from local farms after human keepers have been forced to flee. The pigs, for their part, were ill-suited to life in the wild in a radioactive post-apoplectic hellscape and presumably threw in their lot with the tough, wily boars their best chance of survival. The result is a new kind of boar-pig hybrid that originated in the initial exclusion zone within 20 kilometers of the site of the nuclear plant.
I have figured out, like, the key to writing these unbelievable stories where you present an animal as some just horrific threat to mankind is you get to choose your own adjective to throw in there. It wasn't just the invasive hornets. It was the invasive murder hornets. It's not just the radioactive pigs. It's the radioactive terror pigs. It's all about the correct adjective use. You know?
The register.com.
Same thing restaurants have done. You know? Fresh hand-carved steak. Well, it's always hand-carved. Fresh picked lettuce. It's always fresh picked. You throw the terror in. You throw the murder in. You escalate the interest.
Matt DePew, who writes for theregister.com, should not be a journalist. He should be writing fiction. This is a tremendous command of the language. In some cases, the aggressive porkers have refused to give ground and are attacking returning humans, meaning human authorities have been forced to deploy armed assassination teams of hunters to flesh them out. First off, a hunter is an armed assassin.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so it's just hunter. I mean, what kind of hunter? It's like the guys that think they can kill the grizzly bear with a fist fight? No. The future of the Fukushima terror pig is hard to predict. If they had the intelligence to team up and combine into one unstoppable force, an indestructible boar army of that nature would surely be able to overrun the rest of Japanese and possibly the whole world.
Short leap there from overrunning Japan to overrunning the whole world.
How are they getting off the island?
Yeah, I think we could team up and fit. I mean, the whole world gets together. Unfortunately for the boar, although they naturally live in matriarchal groups, their natural aggression and territorial nature mean that it would be very much out of character to combine into one huge, terrifying unit, whether for the purposes of destroying human civilization or any other reason. So they're unorganized right now, but this is why we should be nervous. Because what if they get organized?
If they get organized, right? All you need is one indestructible radioactive terror pig to get smart enough to organize everything, and the deal's off. We're done.
You guys aren't coming back from Japan. You're not getting back. You may die. You're not getting back. You're going to be trapped in that hotel for decades.
Suddenly getting quarantined in my hotel room for 3 weeks sounds good.
Right.
But I think you should let the Americans loose, Japan. See? Japan government, I know you listen to the College Football Podcast a lot. You should let us loose, get those helicopters with the machine guns. We'll go take them down. I would volunteer.
Suit us up, man.
If you just keep the bar open till 7:30, that'll be the deal. Just let me.
It's an easy trade here, you know? Yeah. We take care of your pig problem. Hour. You keep the bars open.
Yeah. I'm kind of on the side of the boars. I'm not happy with the Japanese government trying to restrict my movements and alcohol consumption. So maybe the boars, maybe I team up with the boars.
You could be the boar leader.
Could be.
You've been called a boar, B-O-R-E, but now you'd be with the B-O-A-R.
He's been called both in his defense.
This podcast needs to end, so we will end it.
Yes.
We'll be back next week, though. Or it's back soon. I don't know when. Talk to y'all later.